You can use all your business skills, but you're doing more good every time. So she said, oh, well, if you're that interested, give up your job in Pfizer and set up a business with me then. And a couple of months later, I said, right, I've handed my notice in. What are we doing?
Welcome to Brave Bold Brilliant. I'm here today with Mandy Powell. Now, Mandy is the co-founder and CEO of Good Wash Company, based in Wales. So welcome, Mandy. Nice to see you.
Thank you very much.
Oh, well, listen, finally we got this in the diary, right?
I know. I do apologise. It's a bit manic running your own business, as you know.
Well, we're going to talk all about that because we're going to share your journey, but also some of the, you know, the big business lessons that you've learned in your kind of transition from that big corporate world into being an entrepreneur as well. And now you're scaling up, which is really exciting. So, Mandy, you had a very successful career at Pfizer. You were there for 11 years, head of business and marketing, and then you made the decision to set up your own business. What was the driver behind that?
I think there were loads. I think I was coming up to 40 and I started to wonder kind of, you know, what's my purpose, what's my why in the world, so to speak. I think Pfizer had been wonderful. I'd learned so much, met some wonderful people, you know, kind of seen the world and had loads of opportunities. But I got to the point where I wanted more. I was driven by what's my own purpose, I guess. So I wanted to take all the things that I'd learned in Pfizer and, you know, my previous career, and bring it back to Wales. But I didn't want it to be just about the profit. Pfizer was, well, all pharmaceutical companies are very profit driven. And for me, yes, okay, everyone needs money to live and it needs to be profitable. But for me, there's more than that. There's more to life than money. And I think sometimes we get our priorities wrong. So, yeah, sorry, that's quite a long-winded answer. But it was to come back to Wales, to work in Wales, to share the beauty of Wales and to do something with like a social purpose.
Yeah, fantastic. And, you know, it's interesting because I was a bit older than you were when you made that decision to jump out of corporate into a different journey, if you like, a different part of your business and career life. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, there comes a point where you go, well, why am I doing this? What is my purpose? What's the legacy I want to leave? You know, so there can be quite a lot going on there. And I think, you know, businesses that have a clear why, they know their purpose, and individuals that have that really create meaningful experiences for their clients and for their offering, because it's very value led. So talk about Good Wash and how the business that you set up along with your co-founder Kelly Davis back in the day, you know, sort of fulfilled that purpose driven agenda that you had then, Mandy.
Yeah, of course. So I also forgot to mention that at the time I had a Labradoodle called Duffel and a Westie who I adored called Maisie. And every time I had to go to like Reigate or Surrey for Pfizer meetings, I'd have to leave them at like 6 a.m, drive for 5 hours across the M25. And I started to like be in the car and like resent it. So I think there's a lesson there that if you feel something, if you're unhappy doing something, like listen to yourself. There's a reason why. There's like it means you're not like, that's not where you're meant to be. So that was the first thing. And I'll tell you why I'm telling you that now. But so I started to feel this, like I'm not overly happy. I don't feel satisfied. And then I was at a Welsh sports dinner because I'm used to play hockey and touch rugby for Wales. And Kelly was actually a key speaker at this event because Kelly's an ex-Arsenal and Liverpool footballer. And also she played for Wales. So she was talking at this event about her social enterprise. And a social enterprise is a business that works and runs like a normal business, but it's got a social purpose. And I'd never really heard of a social enterprise before, because obviously I was in Pfizer and it was like profit, 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 profit. So I was sat next to her, kind of as fate would have it. And I said, oh my God, you know, what you've just said really inspired me. You can use all your business skills, but you're doing more good every time. So she said, oh, well, if you're that interested, give up your job in Pfizer and set up a business with me then. And it just kind of stuck with me. So a couple of weeks later, I rang her. Like, obviously, we'd been chatting in between. And a couple of months later, I said, right, I've handed my notice in. What we're doing? And it was that kind of, you know, you say like you just jump and you don't know what's going to happen. But I knew that I didn't want another 10 years doing what I was doing. And sometimes you have to jump to make you react. Do you know what I mean? You've got to be scared to do it. So, and then, yeah, we were just like, right, what shall we do? I knew I wanted, like, I like nice things unapologetically. Like, you know, I'd earned quite a good salary with Pfizer. So I liked going to Selfridges. I liked going to Liberty's. I liked, you know, Aesop, Le Labo, and all the lovely Jo Malone's. So I wanted to have a luxury product, but I wanted it to have a social purpose. And at the time, anything with a social purpose was quite crafty, you know, like it wasn't like high end. So whatever that we did, and we looked at wine, we looked at coffee, we looked at socks, we looked at chocolate. And it was like, we knew we wanted it to be luxury, but we also wanted it to be a necessity. So we wanted something that people would have to buy every day. But if they choose to buy from us, they could have luxury, a good product, but they would do good at the same time. Mm. So literally we explored everything and we said, right, what's the first thing you do when you get up? You have a wash, right? People got to have a wash. If you're going to have a wash, have a good wash. And then that was it. And we just took it from there, really. And that's how it started.
Oh, fantastic. I love the fact that, you know, well, there's a couple of things as you were talking that were sort of, you know, resonating with me, which was almost, you know, take the leap and figure out what's going to happen next later. So, you know, you don't always have to have the perfect plan, the perfect business case, you know, and actually, if you haven't, you know, taken that leap, someone, anyone that's listening now, you know, it's encouraging to hear that you don't have to have all of the detail figured out. But if you've got a strong reason why, you'll find out what you're going to do and how you're going to do it later. So start with the why. And that period of exploration, Mandy, where you were, you know, trying different things, bouncing ideas around, was that quite a long time or how long was that process before you landed on Good Wash?
I think I left Pfizer in April. And I think that Christmas time we had our first stall in Cardiff Christmas Market. And we sold our first product. And I remember, and I'll tell you about the journey beforehand, because it's, you know, it's proper jumping out of a plane and figuring it out as you go. But I remember when we sold the first product, I was like, oh my God, like, somebody's bought what we've designed. And it was just that, it was that first thing. And it was, yeah, that was really cool.
Fantastic. So jumping out of the airplane then.
So my kind of speciality in Pfizer was dermatology and rheumatoid arthritis. So I know a lot about the diseases. And as well as that, I have a, you know, my passion is natural products. Like, I don't like chemicals. I don't know what, you know, if we don't have to use them, why are we using them? Why are we putting them on our body? Why are we putting them in our body, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm very much about the natural environment. And through my time at Pfizer, I've also brought with me a rheumatologist and dermatologist who's joined the board. So we kind of developed based on old Welsh remedies. So looking at like Welsh lavender, you know, looking at natural ingredients that you could forage yourself and put into different products and what those do for the skin. So for example, those suffering from psoriasis and eczema, they could use like lavender, rose geranium works wonders on the skin, you know, and they help not only treat the skin, but heal the skin. And we've had people that have suffered from psoriasis all their lives, and they've only ever been able to use over-the-counter stuff, but for the first time ever, they can use like just a normal product. Mm. So going back to the question, we kind of explored, literally on this kitchen table where I'm sat right now, we explored making soap, developing different things, and then getting them certified. So that was really important. As I mentioned, the dogs at the start, Maisie was a Westie and she suffered really bad from like, she always had to be biting her paws or scratching. Mm-hmm. So one of the first products we developed was a dog wash, which we called Woof Wash. which was natural. It had a tiny bit of tea tree in it to help with any fleas or anything like that. And then as we developed it, I was finding that Maisie would come into the shower with me sometimes. So I was thinking, right, well, why not get it approved for human use as well, and we can choose it together. So that was one of the first kind of USPs, was if you can, like, the dog wash is also approved for human use. And then we found that it worked really well on children that had like head lice and stuff, because fleas and head lice are similar.
Mm.
So it was, it's all kind of like serendipitous, you know, like it just kind of happened, and we kind of fell into stuff because we were genuinely living by what we were doing.
Yeah, fantastic. How big's the business now, Mandy, in terms of, obviously you started with, you know, yourself and Kelly, so there were two of you on the team, if you like, at that point. But how big has it grown in terms of either the number of teams that you've got or the clients you've got?
At the moment, we kind of like, I've got like a reputation for getting loads of bang for my buck, so to speak, because everybody who, like, go ask them to deliver more than they expect, but because they all bought into the purpose of the brand and why that we're doing it, everyone who's like stayed with us is really part of the journey and they believe in it. So it's not like they're just checking into work and leaving. Mm. Like, even I've got kind of directors of the company, so to speak, who do a lot more than directing, you know, like. So, for example, the latest director we've got is an amazing guy. He's like head strategist for Saatchi & Saatchi, which is like a big advertising agency. And he's loved the brand from the start and said, look, you know, and so I said, look, come and join our board. But I'm like, right, Richard, can you write the newsletter, please, this week? And he does a brilliant job. But there's no kind of, there's no hierarchy or egos, really. Everyone's just trying to get this to work.
Mm, yeah, fantastic. And on the production side, Mandy, obviously you had your experience at Pfizer, you know, so you're well connected, I suppose, in that world of, you know, production and actually bringing a product to life in very real terms, and packaging and distribution and all that side of things. How difficult was that for you at the beginning to find the right sort of production resource and partnership on that side?
We found a good partner straight away, and then we work with different makers across Wales. So we've kind of got a lot of people who kind of feed into Good Wash, and we're hoping to create more and work with more. So I don't think that was ever an issue. I mean, COVID happened, didn't it? And then that was an issue. Mm-hmm. and then Brexit. Oh, I don't know which one happened first. Was Brexit, then COVID?
Brexit, then COVID, I think, yeah.
And cost of living crisis. We've had all these kind of, you know, big events, but we've managed to kind of sail through them because we have these good relationships with all our suppliers. Mm. And we kind of source locally where we can, and we've got good people that really want to support and help us, so, you know, that's all worked really well. I think the, in terms of the packaging side, that's something that we're looking at now. So when we first started, we went to like a large branding agency in London, and I won't mention them, but they literally laughed me and Kelly out of the room. And I remember, obviously, I'd given up my job at Pfizer, and Kelly and I went to London, sat in front of this agency, and was like, this is our idea, what do you think? And they literally said, it's never going to work. You need to take the Welsh language off it if it's going to sell outside Wales. You know, you can't have luxury and social in the same brand. And everything that we said we wanted to do, we, like, who's going to wash in the same shower with their dog? Your nuts, like, give up now, type thing. And I remember being in the taxi and I was crying. I was like, hell, what have we done? But then I thought, no, actually, we'll, you know, we believe in this. So that's my first bit of advice, is like, just because someone else doesn't get it, even if they are supposed to be experts, you know, if you're creating your own path, then no one probably will get it until you've further up that road. So keep going and believe in your idea. So anyway, we literally designed the label ourselves, found a local guy to turn the post-it note that we still have into the label, and that's the label that we've stuck with to where we are now. And I think, yes, it's Forestry Commission approved, and we've done the best that we can, But this is something that we're going to look at next year when we have our B Corp accreditation, is to really look at innovative ways around packaging and look at how we could bring the natural environment of Wales into the packaging, and loads of different ideas like that. So it's really exciting.
Yeah, fantastic. I love that. You know, it, just because someone is a big organization with a brand and maybe loads of global clients and this, that, and the other, but it doesn't mean to say that they know everything. And, you know, you're right, Mandy. You know, I think, you know, a lot of people will tell you no or it's not possible until someone does it. And then it becomes possible, right? You know, first man on the moon, whatever you want to talk about. I think, but having that belief and sticking with it rather than let those naysayers blow you off track is obvious. I mean, because you could have just given up then.
Yeah, but I think, you know, no one's you. Like, you know this, you've got loads of your own businesses and stuff, and you are unique, and that's what you're bringing to the world, and other people might not get it. But then as soon as you get to a certain level and you've got enough following and enough tribe, suddenly then other people will be like, oh, that's a good idea, I'm going to try that. And then suddenly you've got loads of competition because everyone's doing it now. So
yeah.
It's good because, you know, the more good people do in the world, the better. So that's kind of a good thing. But it's a bit like large corporates, experts in certain areas, sometimes they just play safe, they play within the lines because they belong to it, and that's naturally what happens.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about B Corp status, and there's a lot of focus at the moment on ESG, you know, for large corporations. But I think, you know, B Corp status, Elemis, not that long ago got B Corp status as well. I'm actually interviewing Ariel Frank, who is one of the co-founders of Elemis, in a couple of weeks. So it'll be interesting conversation around that journey, you know, as well. But there's, you know, B Corporation status is quite a thing to get accredited. It's not an easy, it's a rigorous process. So I was going to ask you around, was that always sort of on your radar even when you started the, you know, early days of the business, or is it something that's kind of become, you know, more of a focus for you as you've got to a certain stage? And it's obviously it's very aligned with your values as well. And so at what point did you think, yeah, absolutely, this is what we need to do and we want to do?
Okay, I think the good thing is that we're B Corp is everything that we are. So we started the company, and even when I've had meetings with kind of the B Corp accreditors, they're like, well, this is what you're doing anyway. So what I'm trying to say is we're not doing it. We're not changing who we are to get this new, really cool, trendy B Corp accreditation that we need in order to sell more products. The B Corp status is everything who we are naturally and authentically. The only issue we've got is that even though we've got all the evidence, it's having the time, because we're not big enough and I'm too busy doing everything, and you know the team's really busy, it's having the time to like put it all together and do the application. So that's the only barrier. We've got everything ready, and it's been in the file for the last 6 months, but it's just, when are we going to do it? So we are in the process of having that now. We've also just came out as top, actually, as one of the top Welsh businesses in terms of their carbon emissions for their size. And also as we grow, our carbon emissions won't grow because of the way that we run things and the processes. So, yeah, I don't know whether that answers your question, but...
Well, no, I think it's a really good point that in the, you know, B Corp is, yes, okay, it's a lovely thing to have the stamp and the accreditation, but it, because it's so much embedded in your DNA anyway, it is, you're not having to kind of create something new or adapt your processes or the offering, whereas other organisations, maybe they've got a longer history, you know, where things were done in a different way because that was how it was back then, you know. So I think it's great that it's just a natural thing for you to do. And like you say, it's just the admin of actually making sure that, you know, you formally get it. But yeah, I love it. I think it's fantastic. And, you know, as I mentioned, we, you know, there's a lot more focus on ESG in general, I think, which is a great thing because it's, the world has shifted significantly. From a sustainability point of view, Mandy, and let's talk big picture, let's talk, you know, outside of Good Wash, you know, if we want to make the planet, the world a better place, at a macro level, what are the big things that you think, you know, governments, politicians, you know, environmentalists, all of those kind of group of people that can look at things on a broader perspective, what do you think we really need to be focusing on now to make sure that we protect the planet in the right way?
That's a massive question, isn't it?
I know. Two or three things that stand out for you.
I think for me, and I've always thought this, and it's even stronger now, it's kind of, you know, if you cut me in half, this is what I would show, is that the planet isn't ours. Like, us humans think that the planet's ours, and we're just like, here, we should be looking after it, and its animals, and its environment. It's absolutely beautiful. Like, nature's wonderful. It fascinates me. And there's so much more we don't know about, I don't know, what's in the sea, for example, what's the best. And I just think it's absolutely amazing. But it's like we're drilling holes in it. You know, it's like we've got our priorities all wrong. The way that we treat animals, you know, the meat trade, it breaks. Like, sometimes if I see something, I have to just get rid of it, because it really does affect me. The way that we kind of mass farm animals, are we sending them live transport to like Europe or something? So anyway, I'm going off on a tangent, but my point is, the planet isn't ours to destroy. You know, we should be looking after it. And I think, without going into loads of detail, I don't really have a priority, but I just think if the world leaders would actually do what they say and actually take a step back and think, right, if we keep drilling for oil, this is going to happen. If we keep prioritizing money and profit over the planet, like, we're going to just keep destroying it. So every decision that they make needs to be about the planet. So put the planet first, mm-hmm. and then profits further down. But I feel like they're saying, and I say they with a broad brush, and I'm not really political, but if you're trying to save the planet, then surely every decision you make should make the planet better in every way.
Mm. Yeah.
It's about like profits and that. Do you know what I mean? I think it's quite simple. I think the answer is quite simple, is do what you say you're going to do and be authentic about it.
Yeah. 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 No, I think you're right. It's a massive topic, and there's a lot of elements to it. You know, I mean, I spent most of my career in the travel industry and, you know, running large global travel businesses, and, you know, that travel's amazing. You know, it does a lot of good. It creates jobs and where, you know, and takes people out of poverty, but there's an environmental impact as well. Right. And, you know, there was this week, actually, Virgin had the first flight from the UK to New York using sustainable fuel. You know, it's a drop in the ocean. It's still not perfect, but it's making sure that we're at least trying to do the right thing, you know, and technology and science needs to catch up, clearly. You know, it's a massive topic, and I think you're right. But if we think about that first, not third or fourth down on the agenda, it just flips the mindset, doesn't it?
Like, genuinely, what are we trying to achieve here? Well, we're trying to achieve kind of like it to improve the planet and to stop destroying it. So that should be like the reason for every decision you make. And sometimes, and I see politicians on TV, and you ask them a question and they don't answer the question. They just kind of pivot and say the point they want to make. And it's like, do you really care? Or is that, you know, like, I just, that frustrates me. So I think, let's get authenticity and your purpose right. And I think things should fall from that.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. Okay, I love that. So Mandy, for you as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, founder, what would you say has been the most challenging thing for you, making that transition out of big corporate into being your own boss? Because it is quite a step change. I've done that journey myself, and it's, you know, it can be quite lonely, and, you know, you sort of, all of a sudden you crave the freedom, choice, flexibility, but then all of a sudden there's no structure and you're starting with you and your phone and that's it. You know, so those early days can be quite interesting, that journey. But what have you personally found the most challenging for you when you know making that jump?
I think I wouldn't change it for the world. Like, I think we just mentioned when we first spoke was I've learned so much, you know, and sometimes you've got to go through hard times to learn, haven't you, and like grow. But I think what on one of your podcasts, actually, you mentioned about you go from like a large corporate and you've got a HR team, you've got an accounts team. So I can be like, right, give me the numbers for the month. What's the forecast? Right, I've got an issue with this member of staff. How would you deal with it? And suddenly you're like a loose cannon when you're on your own. And I am, you know, or like, so for example, if a TV company wanted to interview the CEO of Pfizer, there'd be like loads of red tape. This is what you say, this is what you don't say, this is what you need to put in. And there'd be loads of advisors, whereas like ITV would come down to the good sheds and they're like, right, Mandy, CEO of Goodwash, can you just do the interview? And I'm like, yeah, but you know, no experience, nobody advising me. So yeah, things like that really, you know, I've noticed. It is quite lonely because you kind of got to look after everyone else. I'm the one not taking a wage if we don't hit the numbers. You're looked after in corporate, you've got private healthcare, you know, you've got sick pay and things like that. And as founder, if it falls, this is your baby that you're letting fall. And you kind of work yourself to the ground, I guess, to try and make it work, don't you?
Yeah. I think it feels very different. I think, you know, I did a video on this. I think you were watching it, Mandy, at the time. And, you know, I think also when you're investing your own money or money that you have personally kind of got financial backing from others to back you and what you're trying to do, it feels very, very different from versus being in a large organization as well, where, yes, okay, you know, you're going to be respectful of budgets, but until, you know, it's out your pocket, what do I spend it on? Or, you know, for some entrepreneurs, they may be remortgaging their house to fund, you know, a startup or whatever it may be. So on that financial side, has that been an area that you've been, you found challenging, or is that sort of just come okay for you when you're scaling up?
Do you know, I think I've always been quite cautious with money. So even in corporate, I'd always get a return. I'd always make sure, and I was quite successful, but I always felt like it was monopoly money a little bit. So I'm going to get paid no matter what. Pfizer's going to do really well no matter what. So it was a little bit like, if it did fail, then it's not going to keep me awake for 3 months crying. Whereas if we don't hit the numbers and suddenly we're not breaking even, it's keeping me awake at night.
Yeah.
There's a different kind of stress. And also your name, it's my name and my reputation, and you don't want that to fail. So in terms of the finances, we recently did a capital raise.
Yeah, like a capital raise, an injection of, yeah, funds, yeah.
It's the first time I've ever done that.
Yeah.
And a lot of the customers, like local customers, believe in Goodwash and put their own money in. These aren't like kind of, you know, the standard investors who kind of share money out and invest in loads of businesses. They're kind of real people who have only ever invested in Goodwash. So that puts, even though that's lovely and they believe in it, it puts massive pressure on me even more then, because I've got their responsibility as well. So, I mean, I'm in touching wood and I'm thinking everything is going to be okay and I will try my best, but it does put that extra pressure on you. So it is completely different in your own business, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, listen, it's great that you've got such loyal customers that believe in the business and are becoming, you know, they're investing with you for the growth. That's fantastic.
I was going to say as well, I've actually got, I don't know whether you're going to know what I mean, but I'm starting to get a reputation now where I'm really like tight with the money, so to speak. So like consultants come in and they say they want to help, but they just try and spend money like water. Whereas I'm like, right, if I spend £1, what am I getting back? And
yeah,
I've literally got this reputation of like, oh, Mandy just doesn't want to spend any money now. But I do, but I've got to see the return. You can't just, you know, and it's what's priority to get to the next stage of growth? Because even though having, I don't know, a process for something fluffy over there that's all frills. But at the moment, I'm still trying to make the cake. So don't talk about icing yet. I know the icing will be nice, but I'm not paying for the icing before I've made the cake. It's a little thing.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And you know, obviously you're at a stage now, you know, not you, you're far from a startup now, you know, you're 5 years in, I think. And you're now talking about scaling up. You're raising finance in order to do that, invest for growth. What does that scaling up look like for you, Mandy, over the next couple of years?
So we've started with a team build. And I think surround yourself with good people, people who really get it. And I've just found an absolute diamond in our operations manager. That was a recruitment this year. And we're just about literally Monday moving to a larger unit where we have, at the moment we've got like three different buildings. We work on the farm here doing stuff. We're going to bring it all together where we have office space upstairs and an operations downstairs with the team. So that will now enable us to grow to the next kind of top tier without any move or changing overheads. So for me, that's really, really helpful. So a places move, we've got people building a team. We've got processes set in place now. And I think that's been my biggest struggle is if you're in a corporate world, there's procedures and policies and you say, right, to somebody, can you do this? They'll do it. Whereas when you're relying on people without any contracts or job descriptions and they say, no, I'm not doing that. You're like, what? what do you mean? So processes are really, really important. And I think that's a bit of advice. I wish I'd had them earlier. It would have saved me a lot of stress. So people, processes, and obviously our new unit. They're quite big moves. But I think there's almost like a step jump for me in terms of my management that I'm almost stepping away from the business now. It's, I think for the last 5 years, I've just been in survival mode, just doing everything all the time. And my nervous system's constantly up here. And now I'm like, right, the business can run on its own. And I now can go and do what I really want to do, which is go out and meet people and help grow the business and develop the business and kind of oversee it growing.
Yeah, fantastic.
And that means moving away from, you know, stop interfering with the staff. Like my operations manager's got it. I don't need to come in and check all the time. I think I get on people's nerves because I'm coming in going, have you done this? And it's not my job now. But I can't help it. But I'm fine.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it does take an adjustment, you know, because what you're leading is not the same as managing, right? So when you're starting out and you're doing everything, you're managing, you know, you're very much in the weeds, you're getting stuck in, you roll your sleeves up, you know, you're the HR director, you're the CFO, you're the MD, you're the chief bottle washer, you're the person that sticks the labels on the bottles, whatever it might be, you know, and I think that's perfectly normal. But as you're now at the stage you're at, you know, for you to be stepping up as a leader, you know, it's obviously the right thing to do. But emotionally, that takes an adjustment for you and for those around you as well. So, I mean, I always say, Mandy, you know, I think being a good leader is like being a helicopter. You know, you need to be here hovering above, looking at the horizon, making the big strategic moves, you know, really leading the business from the front. And then you need to know when to land. If there's something happening that requires particular attention or the team needs some support, fine, but take off again. Let them get on and do their job. You need to be able to do this all the time, knowing, don't you? And it is a skill. It's a skill, definitely. Yeah. How do you get the support that you need then, Mandy? Do you have, you know, you mentioned about having the right people around you. Obviously, the team is clearly critical, which you've already covered. But do you have a safe outlet, a safe support network outside of the sort of the day-to-day team that you've got that just helps you really, you know, keep sane on a daily basis?
I surround myself with some really good people. Like the office is like a therapy room. Like, you know, I work with one of my directors daily and he deserves a medal, but he's brilliant. You know, I've got some really good mentors that I found organically along the way. really good people that I can learn from, who really got your back as well. So that's quite good. And my family are like really supportive, so it's all good. And we've just launched the Good Wash charity, because previously we were just kind of doing it all in the kick, but we've got the charity now, and we've got some really good, you know, people with a lot of experience in the charity. So I feel like I've surrounded myself with like wow people who've been there, done it, and I'm learning a lot from those.
Yeah, it's so important. You know, it doesn't matter what you're doing, whether you're running a big business, a corporate, or whether you're, you know, a solopreneur, or, you know, you're in a job. You know, I think we all need to make sure we've got the right people around us to help us grow, really. And sometimes that can mean saying goodbye to certain relationships if they're not really on your page, or are not, you know, are not kind of supporting you, or don't get it. They just don't get it, and that's fine. But have you had any people that have not got where you're trying to head to, and you've maybe had to cut out or reduce the time you spend with people? Have you had critics around you that have not been helpful for your journey, Mandy?
I think we've had, because the brand's quite cool, it's quite a cool brand, and people want to be a part of it. We've attracted a lot of people who want to be a part of it. And people who, you know, there's two people I've got in mind who've kind of been like, I'll say, circling around and trying to help. And then when we did the investment raise, wanted to kind of come on board, but didn't really want to get their sleeves rolled up. And it felt like it was more of like a badge on their arm to be part of Good Wash than actually help. Mm. And it just didn't fit. And I remember when both times when I met these guys, I had a gut feeling about them. And I kind of went with it. And then I was like, actually, my gut feeling was right all along.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that I've learned, your gut's there for a reason. It's always right in all walks of life. And I've almost learned to listen to it straight away now. I don't have to go through the pain of not listening to it for it to tell me it's told me so. So I'm quite cutthroat. If something's not right, I'll be honest with that person. And I think a lot of people in business skirt around the issues to be polite. And obviously we're always polite and, well, you know, respectful. But Good Wash are like a really honest brand. And I think, so going back to my sports days, if you had somebody in a team who kept dropping the ball, you'd say, stop dropping the ball, learn how to catch properly. Because that's feedback. It's a gift. You have to be honest. Otherwise, people are not going to know. And I think that's something that I've brought into my business throughout is, look, this might sting a little bit, but I'm telling you for this reason, blah, blah, blah. And I think that honesty, you know, it works, because then everyone knows where they are and there's no ambiguity around things.
Yeah, you're right. It's incredible how people don't have real conversations, because I suppose fundamentally as human beings, we all want to be liked and loved, right? Deep down. And therefore anything, you know, that goes against that, potentially in our own mind goes against that, you know, we tend to shy away from or skirt around it. But you're right. I think, you know, being able to have real conversations, and this is congruent with your brand values, with your own personal values as well. How can you be honest and straight if you're not, you know, living and breathing that as a value yourself? So I think it's a really good lesson actually that you're sharing around, don't be afraid to have the tough conversations, but have them in the right way.
Yeah. And there's been three very difficult conversations, and now the board just kind of like say, oh, Mandy, can you deal with that, because they know I but I do, and it's fine.
Fantastic. I love it. And Mandy, you know, in terms of where people can find Good Wash, what's the best way for people to buy the products or connect with you, or, you know, want to be part of your team? I know you have a lot of volunteers as well that work within the business. What's the best way for people to connect and find out more?
Just go onto the website, www.goodwash.co.uk, and there's a contact us section. And it'll either come through to me or the team, and we'll just take it from there.
Yeah, fantastic. That's great. So Mandy, you've had an interesting time, shall we say, over the last 5 years and also throughout your life. And I bet you've had loads of advice from people, some of it good, some of it maybe less good. Any standout advice that's really, you know, worked well for you?
I think when I first started with Kelly, Kelly'd done a few different businesses before, social enterprises, and I was like reacting to everything. Everything would stress me out. I've got to do everything now. And one bit of advice Kelly said to me was learn to feel comfortable in the uncomfortable. And that's something that stuck with me. And like, there's always stuff going on, but you just got to learn, like, I'm just used to it now. So it doesn't stress me out. Like, there could be a couple of fires going on and I'm like, oh, it's okay. They're not actually like really tall yet. It's a bit like that. So learn to get comfortable in the uncomfortable is something that I've taken with me. And I think it's really true.
Yeah, that's fantastic advice, because there's always going to be problems and challenges and things that don't go right. You know, I think sometimes people are naive and think there's not going to be any problems. And then when there are, it's like, oh my God, I can't, you know, what's going on? Whereas actually, just get over it. It's going to happen. So you may as well learn how to deal with it and build that thick skin, that resilience. And also it allows you then, doesn't it, to know when is a fire a genuine fire? And when is it actually just smoldering a little bit? Because your response needs to be different. Whereas if everything's a disaster or a catastrophe, then, you know, you're not going to be able to put the right amount of effort and focus on the right things as well, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, fantastic. And you mentioned about Kelly, and, you know, before we press record, you both started the business together. Kelly's gone on to do some, you know, very still much involved in the business, but your partnership has evolved, hasn't it, over time? And just talk a little bit about that, because again, I think anyone that's listening that's starting a business or is already in a business, maybe with a co-founder, it doesn't always mean that how you start is how you're going to finish in terms of the setup. So can you just share a little bit of that, Mandy, as well? Because I think that's quite useful and insightful for people.
Yeah, I mean, Firstly, it's brilliant to have a co-founder because it can be lonely, as we've said. And Kelly's skills were the complete opposite to mine. So Kelly loved a spreadsheet. She's super organized. I'm the creative one, so I used to drive her nuts. But yeah, I think when you're a growing business, sometimes it can't hold two salaries as well. So it just kind of, Kelly had this wonderful opportunity to work for Ashoka, Global Ashoka, which is doing great things across the world. So she took that, which is completely fine, and kind of I stayed with Goodwash to help it grow, because I think it needed, my skill set is what it needed at that time, at that growth stage. But Kelly's still very much involved with the charity and, you know, is a shareholder of the commercial arm as well. So very much involved and always there for advice if ever I need it.
Yeah, no, that's great, isn't it? Because like you say, relationships evolve, opportunities come up, different things change. And I think to be able to adapt to that and still keep a really positive relationship throughout, which obviously you both have, and to say, okay, well, where am I going to play? Where do I participate in this business now in the context of where we are today? I think that's a really healthy thing to do. And sometimes, you know, with some businesses, maybe, you know, other organizations, they might end up going different ways, and that's okay as well. It just depends on what's needed really and how the situation has shifted. So Mandy, it's been a big year for you, as every year is big, every year is different, I know that. But for this year, if you were to describe this year in a word, what would it be and why?
I think eventful, but positive. So it's been a massive growth year. So I think positive, I think, would be my word. You know, the cost of living crisis, or everything that's happened, a lot of businesses, particularly local businesses, have gone under. I walk down the high street in Cardiff even, or London, and you see chains have just gone and closed down. So positive in a way that we're still here and we're growing, which is great. The charity's launched this year, which means that we can now help even more people, animals and people. So that's positive. And I think the fact that I'm stepping, learning to step out of the Manushka into the helicopter, as you said, that's positive as well. So yeah, really positive, I say.
Yeah, fantastic. And yeah, huge congratulations, Mandy. It's wonderful to see you thriving and going on to the next level. Like you say, you know, there are lots of other brands and businesses that have not made it, unfortunately. And fantastic to see that you're on that growth journey, but you're doing it in a way that is still true to the core values that you started with. And I think that's what's really important, to scale up, but not lose the essence of what Good Wash is all about. So huge congratulations. And, you know, when we think about the words brave, bold, brilliant, Mandy, which is obviously the podcast, what does that mean to you?
I think surround yourself with brilliant people, people that you learn from. I remember Richard from Saatchi coming down to Barry for the first board meeting, and I was chairing it, and I was like, oh my God, wow, he's coming, you know. So I think it makes you nervous, but it's good. It's good to surround yourself with people who are experts in their field. And sometimes you feel like you're surrounded by giants, but that's really good for you. I think brave and bold, you've got to be brave, and you've got to kind of, this is who I am, this is who the business is. And even if you don't get loads of people saying yes, be brave and stand there. And, you know, like we did in the beginning when all the experts said it was a rubbish idea and it never worked. Maisie and Duffel are no longer with us, but Dillis is with us. Come here, Dillis. Dillis is my third director. I take her to the office every day. Come here, Dillis. Up, 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 up. Just want to say hello. Come here, up, up.
Oh, hey, Dillis.
She's listening to the podcast, so she wanted to say hello, didn't you, Dillis?
Oh, fantastic. I reckon I know who the boss is there. Wonderful. Well, listen, Mandy, it's been an absolute joy to speak with you. Thank you so much. And yeah, really look forward to seeing the next chapter, the next phase of growth for you guys. And yeah, good luck with everything.
Thank you. Nice to meet you.
And you.
I really hope you've enjoyed Brave, Bold, Brilliant. Don't forget to subscribe and share with all your friends. And if you've enjoyed listening, I'd love it if you'd leave me a 5-star review.